Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
Facebook turned 15 this month. 214 million Americans can share thoughts, pictures, memes, articles, and propaganda with family, friends, relatives they've never met, people they met one time at a party, and maybe even strangers. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, how Facebook and other social media sites have changed our relationships, for good and for bad. We'll start the hour with a friendship that may never have formed if it wasn't for Facebook. Then I'll talk with Rachel Young, assistant professor of journalism and mass communication at the University of Iowa, and Michael Harris, author of Solitude, In Pursuit of a Singular Life in a Crowded World. We also want to hear about your social media experiences. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Facebook has now been around for 15 years. Millions of Americans interact on the platform every single day in many different ways. And of course, it spawned a social media explosion. This hour, we're going to talk about some of the ways that Facebook and other sites have changed our relationships for good and for bad. We would love to hear from you. How do you think social media has changed your life? How has it changed your friendships? Have you given up particular platforms? Why? Have you tried to quit and failed? Share your story this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I personally have been a Facebook user since 2008, and there are things about it that I absolutely love. I have reconnected with old friends. I keep in touch with people I love who I no longer live near. I can share pictures of my kids. I can share news easily and efficiently with everybody who cares. And then I get instant feedback when I do that. I've also reconnected with people from my past who I actually didn't like and don't necessarily like now. I know more about the political beliefs of distant relatives than I ever wanted to know. I'm Facebook friends with people that I don't know in real life and will probably never have much of a connection with. But I've also developed real, true, deep friendships through Facebook that might not have come about in any other way. One of my friends is on the phone with us now. Her name is Eve Menzel, and she and I met through Facebook. She is also a 40-something professional mom who lives in eastern Iowa. We've seen each other in real life a few times since we first connected, and I consider her to be a true friend. She is with us to explore this unique 21st century friendship that we have. Hi, Eve.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing this morning?
Great. It's fun to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, too.
Well, let's talk about you first. So when did you first start using Facebook?
You know what? Your intro, I should just be like copy-paste. same thing. 2008, I was introduced to the platform. You know, it was around the time of MySpace and all those things and was kind of dwindling out. And I received an email from a man that I was dating trying to share some pictures of chickens that he was raising. And so I actually had to join Facebook to see these photos.
To see pictures of chickens. That sounds
just
that about
romantic.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it really reflects my life. Yeah.
So when you first got on Facebook, obviously that was a pretty limited reason that you got on. But then all of a sudden you're getting notifications that everybody that you've ever met in your entire life is on Facebook. So tell me about those early years. How did you use it then?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting thinking about this. Those early years really were, you know, some high school friends, but really the people that were, I was immediately interacting with in my life were the majority of the friends that I was making. And, you know, I didn't have a ton of friends on those first early years. So, yeah, I guess it was pretty, I was pretty slow to adopt it. But, you know, I did use it, did sort of you know, again, like you said in your intro, find some old friends, stay up on new friends, stay involved with family and other friends that were far away but dear to my heart.
So you actually remember when we became Facebook friends better than I do. So that was several years ago now. I guess you were, I think you were pregnant at the time that we became Facebook friends. So you probably know exactly when it was. But we connected first over Facebook. Why did you reach out?
We had a mutual friend that you did a few shows with. And I can't remember why we became friends. There was something going on in Eastern Iowa that we were both going to be at. And I think we were trying to see if we could connect up at that, I think.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, you have a better memory of that than I do. So we were Facebook friends for about, what, a year or so before we actually met in real life. I remember seeing posts when you were very pregnant and it was very hot out and you were overdue and all of that. But we'd never met in real life. And then we did meet one day through my work. You also are part of a CSA and the television show that I work on for Iowa Public Television was shooting on your farm. And so we met that day, which I remember very clearly because you had an adorable new puppy and an adorable new baby. And I think you remember that a little bit differently than I do because I was sort of in a position of, I guess, power and comfort. And here we were invading your home where you had an infant.
It was, you know, it's my kids still talk about it. And as you know, adore your children because of this interaction. So it's had just a lasting impression on them. But yes, I was very, very newly had a baby and we had just, because we're insane, we got a puppy. And so, and there was vans in our yard and I felt a little chaotic, but it was just so interesting how kind and caring everyone was, and I don't know if that was my own, you know, impression of the relationship we had developed online that I sort of imprinted that on that day, but it was truly a great experience to finally meet you, people from your other job and your family in person.
Well, and we have found online that we have so much in common. We have many mutual friends that I would not have known about in the first place, and it's funny because I think that we, although we run in sort of similar circles, we don't live in the same town. And it's possible that we would never wind up in the same place if we didn't ever actually engineer that on purpose. But it's interesting to me that just through looking at your posts and reacting to your posts and the things that you share and you listening to me on the radio, reacting to my posts, I mean, we have developed this relationship. And I do consider you to be one of my close friends and probably what we've seen each other in real life five times.
Probably. Yep. And I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, it's just so interesting. And I have found there are things that I do because of you. There are things I volunteer for now because you have reached out and asked if we would do them. And just the circle that that has opened up as well because of this limited Facebook interaction. And just, you know, the things that I have learned from you or, you know, the interactions that we've had, just the impact that that has made on my life. And I consider you a true friend as well. And I'm just so grateful that this platform did provide this friendship for us.
Do you have other friends that you are only friends with, you think, because of Facebook?
You know, I have a couple other mom friends that I met because of a breastfeeding group on Facebook that I would not have been friends with in real life. So yes, there's that aspect. And I think that there's the other thing that Facebook has done is that there are influential people in my life that I may not have kept in contact with, that Facebook has allowed me to do that and to sort of see glimpses of their life and reach out to them offline through email or a quick phone call that probably wouldn't have happened without the platform.
Have you changed how you feel about Facebook? I mean, there are obviously we're talking about some of the really wonderful things about it, and I'm very grateful for our friendship and for the way that it's allowed me to maintain and develop a lot of different relationships. There are also some downsides. So tell me how you feel about Facebook now in 2019.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that we would be able to replicate this friendship that we developed in 2019, quite honestly. I use it very differently than I did probably when we met. Now Facebook is really a event management tool for me. I really look to see, you know, what's going on. Are there things coming up that could benefit my kids? It's a snow day. Is the Nature Center having a pop-up camp? I really use it for that. You know, is Iowa Public Radio, do they have a talk about something? You know, what's going on at Prairie Lights? And that's routinely what I use it for, or to check in. Like this morning, my kids were complaining that they couldn't wear shorts. So getting validation from other mom friends that I'm not the only mom struggling with this. So, I mean, it's kind of two different ways that I use it, but it's so different than how I used it in those early days.
Interesting. Do you find yourself being more guarded about personal things than you used to be?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why? Have you had a bad experience, or is this just a sort of a general feeling?
Kind of just a general feeling, as you know, we grew up a lot different than how kids are growing up these days, and just guarding ourselves against what we put out there, what we know people are going to react to. You know, some of our core family values, we really believe in kindness and love and being caring. And that's not always, you know, the environment out on social media platforms. So I think, you know, if it's something isn't, you know, reinforcing someone or building them up, I'm really going to shy away from situations that can lead us to, you know, cyberbullying or just things that can really turn into unkind situations.
What other social media platforms do you use?
I am an Instagram user, and I try to use Twitter.
Why do you try to use Twitter?
I just am not. I struggle at times, like, what is going on? How do I follow this? You know, and it's just not, I'm not on it that much. And so I like the layout and I like the idea of it. I feel like it's showing my age that I'm not that good at it.
Well, and Instagram, I find that to be a very different platform from Facebook. Do you like Instagram?
I do. I find that I feel socially secure on Instagram. I have a smaller following. I feel like I really can control a little bit better about what's getting out there. So I do find it sort of to be my platform of choice these days.
Interesting.
Unless I need to know something that's going on in the world, and then I go to Facebook.
Interesting. Have you considered quitting Facebook?
Absolutely. I consider it every day and I actually, you know, I deleted the app off my phone, to making it so that I'm going to have to log on. But there's just a few groups that I want to know about what's going on or gather information that, you know, pull me back to get that information. But yes, I think about it not even every day anymore, probably once a week. I decide, like, I am going to, I don't even know. Can you deactivate account? I'm going to not log on. Oh, I need to find out how then. But yeah, I do think about it. And what a difference.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, how social media has changed our relationships. Facebook is 15 years old. 214 million Americans have accounts. That means that for a decade and a half, we've been able to connect with friends, family, former classmates, our parents' neighbors, the person we met one time at a party, parents whose kids go to or used to go to the same school as ours, and of course, even strangers. Iowa Public Radio assistant producer Camus Leeson went out to ask people in Iowa City about their social media use. He asked them if they have friends that they only interact with online.
Oh God, I don't think I have any friends on the internet that I don't actually know for real. I mean, in terms of interacting with people in real life, though, I guess there's a lot of people I keep in touch with through social media that I don't interact with in person hardly at all anymore.
Yeah, I have friends that I don't see on the day-to-day. So the only way to reach them is social media.
Yes, I do have friends that I only interact online. It's mainly like the friends that I have from back at home where I mean, we're away from different schools in different states as well, so really the only means for interactions across a social media platform.
Yes, I do. Yes. I have friends on, a lot of email lists and Facebook.
To be honest, I don't have a whole lot of friends I only interact with on social media. I'd say I know a couple people through social media alone, but other than that, everyone else is in person.
Okay.
I don't really have any that I've just met online. I have a lot of coworkers, a lot of family, and a lot of friends online.
The voices of some people in Iowa City talking about how they use social media platforms. We also want to hear from you. What have your experiences been? How has Facebook, how have other social media platforms changed your relationships for good or for bad? We'd love to hear your thoughts. Maybe you've quit social media. We'd love to hear your experiences with that as well. Give us a call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now, Rachel Young, Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University of Iowa School of Journalism. She studies social media. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We also have Michael Harris on the line. He's author of the new book, Solitude, In Pursuit of a Singular Life in a Crowded World. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And one of the things that spawned this conversation, not only the 15th anniversary of the founding of Facebook, but also we were intrigued by an article that showed up in The Atlantic magazine with the title Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die, about how we maintain these weak social connections, people that we would no longer have contact with, but we maintain these relationships through social media. Rachel, give us an idea of what we know a little bit about these orbits of contact, of acquaintance, of friendship that have developed because of social media.
Sure. Well, we've always had those weak ties. And when we look at people's social networks, we can often think of them in terms of strong ties. So the friends and family that you're really close to, and then weak ties, like the people that you're acquaintances with, we might say. And so social media really allows us to stay in touch with weak ties. And I think we've heard that a lot already from the people on the street that you were talking to, that they stay in touch with classmates who they don't see anymore, or people from their lives who they may have naturally lost touch with without social media. But social media gives us a way to still let those people know what we're up to and to find out what they're up to as well. So the benefit of that might be that whatever resources you might get from being in touch with those people, so weak ties are often connected with different networks than you are, so you might find out about a job or internship that you wouldn't have known about otherwise, or maybe you're going to travel to a place you haven't been before and one of your Facebook friends lives there, has been there, and even if they're a weak tie, you can reach out to them and ask them about it. So there are some benefits to still being in touch with those people online.
All right. And what do you think are the downsides to being in touch with these people online?
Yeah, certainly there's always benefits and drawbacks. So I think some of the drawbacks that people were worried about when Facebook was first becoming really popular is that there's some theories that we can only stay in touch with a certain number of people. Like, we really only have the bandwidth to stay in touch with a certain size of social network. And so if we're bringing in all of these weak ties, does that mean that we're going to lose those connections to our stronger ties? So that was a concern initially. And I would say the research at this point showing that that's maybe not entirely the case, that it's not that our friendships are necessarily a lot weaker because we have a lot more ties through Facebook. But we can also, on a platform like Facebook, I think when you mention all the different people that we're connected with, you said, like your parents' neighbor and your preschool classmate and an old coworker, and that's just a really odd audience to all be talking to all at once. So it can be kind of stressful or weird to try to, on Facebook, craft a message that's going to be seen by all of those people.
Right, so. And we share things on social media. And Michael, I know you have a lot of thoughts about this. We share things on social media that we wouldn't necessarily share in real life. I'm not going to walk up to you at drop-off line at school and say, I just got a new puppy and it's the cutest thing ever. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. Or, hey, I just got this great coffee drink. It's so delicious. So, I mean, how has that changed how we communicate with each other?
You're asking me.
Yeah.
I guess there's two major changes. You're right that we share more, and we share weirder things sometimes. And I think it's because of this idea of the branding of the self, right? We become a little obsessed with growing our follower base, right? But so having 400 friends is actually important online in a way that it's not important offline, because there's a kind of commercialization of this social experience, right? So we might be more likely to post the intimate thing, the thing that gathers more attention, right? I think more and more you see people perfectly willing to talk about maybe their baby is ill or their father just died, and things that would have been really taboo subjects even online 20 years ago have become in a cynical way kind of useful as attention grabbers. So there's that commercialization of the friendship, the turning of friendship into a kind of branding exercise. And then the other big change, of course, is just that ambient awareness of so many friends that creates a sense of envy, really, right? That's a lot of dinner parties that are being photographed. It's a lot of skiing trips that you weren't invited on. If you've got 400 friends that you're following in that ambient way, it's really a pool of envy that you're dipping into every time.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about brands. I think about different Facebook friends that I have, and people develop these online personas. So I've got friends that do nothing but complain about how horrible everything is. I have friends who you would think their lives are the most perfect lives possible. Their house always looks perfect in every picture they take. They go on amazing vacations. Everything is wonderful. Everything is fabulous. So, I mean, we do present a not quite real picture of ourselves, most of us, right?
And that can change between platforms as well, right? I mean, I'm thinking of, you were speaking earlier about Facebook, and when Facebook first came out in 2004, I think it was really a general purpose kind of social media experience. But now that we have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, people have started dividing up their social media experience into sort of segmented personality zones. So for myself, for example, Instagram is a private space where I share photos with friends and family. And Twitter is a business experience. It's like a branding experience for me. And Facebook doesn't exist at all in my world. I'm not on it. But a lot of people have found these sort of niche qualities to different platforms. And it's allowed us to, talk about branding. It's allowed us to create multiple brands depending on what we're trying to achieve in each platform.
Yeah, well, and Rachel, I know that you've studied how different people use social media, so we can all use this same platform, but use it in so many different ways. I mean, some of us are the sharers, the content providers. Some of us are the reposters. Some of us lurk. You're a bit of a lurker yourself, right?
Right. Yeah. So we might think of there being, in terms of having, in addition to having sort of different personal brands online, as Michael was talking about, people might all be on the same social media platform, but use it really differently in amounts of use and the types of things they share, what they don't share. So really generally, we can divide people up maybe into posters and lurkers. So people who are really comfortable sharing a lot, share a wide big volume of things, and people who are on social media more not comfortable sharing or not sharing as much, but are there more to see what others are sharing. And there's some evidence that sharing might have more benefits in some ways, because you are getting the affirmation that you get from sharing, so from likes or interactions or support or whatever it is that you're seeking from that post. Whereas with lurking, you're getting a lot of the highlight reel and other people's ski trips and things that they're going on, not necessarily the same affirmation for your own posts if you're not posting much.
I want to read a couple of different emails here, a couple very different takes on Facebook. This is from Angela in Iowa City. She says, in 2011, Facebook allowed me to know that my mom had a stroke and was incapacitated in her home thanks to a coworker messaging me using Facebook. My mom's life was saved thanks to that communication. Also, she says, I reconnected with a friend who turned into my spouse thanks to Facebook. So for me, it's been a fabulous journey. So, I mean, a couple huge life-changing positive interactions for Angela. But we also have this from Ellie in Iowa City. She says, I want to make users of Facebook aware that although it's a good place to meet people with whom you have many things in common, it can also lead to an unhealthy mental state in many ways. Most of the people I'm close with have Facebook accounts, but don't necessarily browse or check their feed often. When I would spend time setting up the perfect post from an event or project I was excited about, I'd become excited at the number of likes, but then became disheartened when others I saw online received 5 or 10 times the number of likes on a post they'd put little effort into. My conscious mind knew that I shouldn't be jealous because my friends were the type that weren't often on Facebook, but subconsciously I couldn't escape the twinge of pain every time this happened. It felt like a competition, and I know for others it can feel this way too. Since I left Facebook over a year ago, I've been more self-aware of my happiness and am no longer quick to jealousy or short bouts of depression. I'm more aware of the people immediately around me in my life and remain in contact with the ones I feel close to who are across the country or the world through phone calls and messages. I've focused in on the few meaningful relationships I have and not on the many superficial ones that are available, which has become a welcome change. And Michael, you write a lot about this downside of social media. I mean, first of all, we curate our lives online. So that means that most of us are posting just the good things, right?
Exactly. And I think it's important to remember here, it's not just about that twinge of envy that writer was describing there, right? We have to remember that the reason Facebook is free is the same reason that Google is free, which is that these platforms are being monetized on the other end. Right, so we make ourselves into objects of desire for our friend groups. Right, I think we post things that inspire envy and competition, and that's of course super useful if you are a social media platform that's making all of its money by selling advertising. Right, you've got more than 2 billion users, all feeling excluded from the happy lives of their friends on Facebook. And then you hit them with ads that offer a pathway to a happier life. So it's not just about creating a sense of envy. It's also about remembering this platform is the ultimate setup for advertisers. And that is, in fact, the reason that platform exists at all.
Right. And I think everybody who spends time on these social media platforms has had these experiences where maybe they comment on a friend's post and say, I love that sweater. Where did you get it? And the next thing that happens is they've got an ad from the company that sold them the sweater. I mean, we're being advertised to, we're being manipulated, and we're being watched, right?
Super creepy. Yeah. And I mean, the levels of creepiness get deeper and deeper each year. I'm a Canadian, but we've all been watching the 2016 fallout in the States very carefully, and the political creepiness that we saw with Cambridge Analytica is also part of that as well, right? That these are, it's not just about helping you choose which sweater to buy, but also helping you choose which candidate to elect.
Right. And we have this tweet from Joe. He says, I quit Facebook 10 months ago because of all that business with Cambridge Analytica, stolen data, and psychographic mapping. He says, that being said, deleting Facebook was great until I got Twitter. So,
right.
Let's.
And, you know, there are a lot of people who are sort of taking a stand by quitting Facebook, but are very much active users on Instagram, which is, of course, owned by Facebook. And they've made a sort of disconnect there, I think.
Definitely. All right. John is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. What's your experience?
So, you guys were talking earlier about having friends on Facebook that you've never actually, like, met in person and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a gamer, so I play a lot of online games, and some of the friends that I've had, or that I have on Facebook, I've used to play games with. Like, I no longer play these games with them anymore, but we're still friends on Facebook. And, you know, I actually very rarely use Facebook. Like, you can go look at my timeline, and I haven't made a single post in years. But I mainly use it for, like, the chat feature, you know, to talk with friends and stuff like that. But I think some of the friends that I have on Facebook are actually probably closer and better friends than some of the friends that I have in real life, like that I'm not even connected with on Facebook.
Oh, interesting. And you communicate with them through chat, but not using the platform that Facebook has provided that is designed to give you the personal information about the people in your life.
Yeah, exactly. I personally don't really get the whole appeal to Facebook. And honestly, I think Facebook is actually very damaging to, you know, today, like, you know, we hear about it all the time in the news, you know, fake news on Facebook, you know, this, that, and the other. I think the addiction that it has brought upon so many people is actually very damaging to, you know, modern day, you know, communications and, you know, how we get our news and, you know,
right. But you still feel like you can use it for what you want it for. We're going to take a short break. That was John in Des Moines. Thank you so much for your call. We'll be back to talk more about how Facebook and other social media platforms have changed our relationships. And we do want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at @iowapublicradio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how Facebook and other social media platforms have changed our relationships over the last 15 years. We want to hear from you, your thoughts. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we sent our assistant producer out to talk to different people in Iowa City about Facebook and other social media platforms. Facebook spawned a big social media explosion, so many people now are on other platforms. My kids tell me that only old people use Facebook, and they could be right. So Camus Leeson, our assistant producer, asked people in Iowa City about the different social media platforms that they use.
Snapchat and Facebook, both since I was about 13.
Okay, I'm kind of funny because I have 4 children who use social media all the time, and so I have them on my accounts, but I don't particularly use the accounts unless they tell me that there's something that they did that they want me to see.
Okay.
So I've got Facebook, I've got Instagram, I have Twitter, and I have WhatsApp, but that's a little bit different.
I use Facebook, and I've had it for a number of years. I'm going to say at least 8, and I have Instagram, and I've had that for about a year.
Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, and probably for like 5 or 6 years now.
Yes, mainly Tinder.
I do use Facebook, definitely more than 10 years. I use Twitter, but only for, I don't tweet, but mostly only for informational purposes, like follow stuff and news and articles and reading kind of purpose. And then I use WhatsApp. What else? Not much Instagram person. That's all.
I use Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I guess LinkedIn. Facebook I've used like since the beginning of high school because that was the thing. Twitter I've used probably since the start of college, so like 2012-ish. Instagram sometime in college, 2015-ish, and LinkedIn when I was starting the hunt for jobs, so 2015, 2016.
All right, the voices of people in Iowa City talking about the different social media platforms that they use. With me are Rachel Young, assistant professor of journalism at the University of Iowa School of Journalism, and Michael Harris, author of the new book Solitude: In Pursuit of a Singular Life in a Crowded World. And of course, all of these different social media platforms have been created for different things. Often they're responding to a movement on one social media platform. People say, hey, I want more of this. And so then there's a new social media platform that people move over to. Michael, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Do you think that we're using social media the way that it was intended to be used?
Well, I mean, you have to remember that the human drives that these platforms are hijacking, those are as old as humans themselves, right? We've always wanted to share information. We've always wanted to gossip. So whether that means handprints painted on the inside of a cave or graffiti on like an ancient Roman wall, that instinct is always there. So I think it's less about wondering if we're using them the way that they were intended to be used and more about the social media platforms hijacking a basic human instinct, right? I think that's always what's at play.
And it seems to have brought out interesting parts about our basic human instincts. I mean, I am constantly shocked by how cruel people are on social media. And I look at, let's say, a post by a newspaper, and then you look at the comments and people say the most outrageous and cruel things, but their names are right there next to it. So they would never say those things. Most of them, I assume, would never say them in real life. But somehow social media removes that part of accountability. Michael, do you have thoughts on that?
Sure. I mean, it's something that we saw long before social media was developed. People are jerks when they drive cars, right? Why is that? It's because they're protected behind a glass windshield screen, right? They feel like they are able, it gives them license to behave in a more primal, maybe, or slightly more aggressive way. They feel they're safe inside the car. And this has been research and tracked for a long time. The glass screen in the case of Facebook is right there on the phone, right? And I think it does even more of that distancing effect. So it gives me permission to be the jerk that maybe I would always be if I didn't think there were going to be consequences for my actions.
Interesting. And Rachel, is that something you talk to your students about? Do they have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do research cyberbullying a fair bit. Okay. So I haven't talked to students about it so much, but I think Michael's right. There's that notion of just not feeling accountable. And then we, you know, kind of take the temperature of what the discourse is, and people being cruel and mad and angry, I mean, kind of breeds more of that, I think. That seems like, you know, that's the tone that's acceptable. So we've certainly seen that on Twitter, in newspaper comments and other places. So, and I think that distancing, and there's also the fact that then that aggression is always permanent. So it's not like saying something off the cuff that then is gone. It's something that is captured there forever that, you know, if you're the target of that aggression, can be really even more harmful,
right?
because it's there forever.
Well, it's interesting. I think, obviously, I think about social media differently because I'm a public person and the way I use it is different. And I feel like I would be directly held accountable if I did anything inappropriate online. And so I think about everything as very public. But it's interesting. I mean, Rachel, people are real people who post these things. It's easy to find out who is doing what online. Do we know why we have that sense of anonymity?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, we know that so much of our social connection is emotional, and we get so much about how people are feeling through their facial expressions. And when we're connecting with them that way, I mean, we can, you know, maybe we feel a lot more connected to their emotional experience, maybe more empathetic. So that that distancing of not having that online, and that I think we have a sense that we're anonymous, even if we really aren't entirely, because we're not looking anybody in the eye.
And of course, many people have, surprise, surprise, found out there are real life consequences. I want to read a few more emails here. This one's from Meg. She says, the most interesting contact I have is with a friend in Ukraine. I became friends with him through a Facebook group mainly based in Iowa. He's been very interesting to be friends with because of his interest in botany and Iowa having very similar native plants and environments to Ukraine. I wouldn't have realized that without this contact. I've also had long conversations about Russia because of the invasion of Crimea and the politics going on in our country. It's a valuable friendship, and I personally would like to have more international Facebook friends to understand people living throughout the world. We've got this from Sean. I don't communicate the same way to my friends, my family, and my coworkers. And for me, Facebook bringing them all together was a negative experience. I am much happier since I got off Facebook for good. And from Clara in northwestern Iowa, I am a 26-year-old wife and mother who deleted my social media accounts in 2017. Even with privacy protections, I became leery of how well my pictures were protected, especially of my kids. After going to a party where five people who were not my friends on Facebook and who I had not met in person beforehand came to me and told me how cute my child was, I quit posting pictures. After doing more research about the dark web, I deleted my account shortly thereafter. If I want to stay in touch with family and friends, I use email and text messages or letters and phone calls. I want to talk about another aspect. And Michael, you've written a great deal about this. One of the things about social media is that it gives people access to us at all times. And so many of us spend so much time looking at our social media accounts, checking in with people. Does that change how we are alone?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we have that addictive drive, right, to feel socially groomed, then every 5 minutes waiting in the grocery store lineup, we're diving into our phone because, of course, we want the next dopamine hit. We want the next little rush, and we have found now that even certain sounds or iconographies that our phones present have physiological responses, right? That we're so keyed into those social grooming drives. So as a result, we have less and less authentic experience of solitude. So what does that mean? It means you're not as able to develop a rich interior life, and it can be hard to remember sometimes why that rich interior life would actually matter. But those empty spaces, that's where fresh ideas come from. That's where we figure out who we really are, and it's also ultimately how we become the kind of people who would become good friends or good. Husbands and wives as well.
The impulse to pull out your phone whenever you're bored. I mean, that sounds like what you're talking about, that we mm-hmm. should just stand in line sometimes and think about things and look at the people who are passing us by instead of immediately filling that time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think of boredom as a kind of gateway to original thought or to some really useful thinking. There's also this idea of the default mode network, which is a kind of set of brain functions that turns on in those moments when you're staring out the window or when you're having the shower that leads to that eureka moment, right? So I think we've all had that experience of lying halfway between sleep and wake in bed. And if you don't jump onto your phone the moment you wake up, you can extend that period of kind of loose connections and the eureka moment kind of bubbles up from there because the ego is not really getting in the way as much. And I think that's a horrible thing to cast aside, right? Those moments of silence that we can really profit from.
Rachel, I'm curious just on a personal level. I mean, you study social media. How do you use social media? How does that inform you as a user?
Well, Well, I don't use it very much. And I think that's evolved for me over the years for a lot of the reasons that we've already heard. But really the fundamental one is just weighing what I felt it was bringing to my life compared to what I thought it was taking away from me personally, and just not feeling like it was adding enough value. And so I still do. I have Facebook and I have Instagram and I have Twitter, but I don't use them very much. And I find that I don't miss them, although it is nice to have them for those reasons that people have already mentioned. If someone you need to check in with or an event you want to find out about.
But, yeah, and as a researcher, you have to have them.
Right. Yeah, right. There's that sense that your existence online is really important to maintaining, you know, your identity as a professional. But yeah, I found that I personally haven't missed them as much. And I have kids who are 11 and 13, so we're now in the age of negotiating what their use of social media is going to be like. So it's helpful for me to have the experience of using it to be able to talk to them about it. But yeah, for me personally, I found that it's not something I've missed a lot.
How about you, Michael? How do you use social media?
I mean, like I mentioned before, I have Twitter and Instagram. I do not have Facebook. I don't miss Facebook at all. Gosh, I never even think about it. Although, I guess once in a while, something will happen on Facebook, and I will be completely left out of the loop. There was actually a moment where a good friend of mine was furious with me for weeks because he had announced the death of his father on Facebook. And then he was so angry that I didn't call to console him when I had no way of knowing, because I wasn't on that platform, right? And so one of the things that happens when you walk away from certain aspects of social media is you realize how, for some people, it has become just the air that you breathe, right? It's become a given. And that's really the most valuable part of, say, taking a weekend away from the internet or something. It wakes you up to the fact that these things don't have to be givens.
Interesting. We have another email. This is from Paige. I've been Facebook free for over 3 years now and Instagram free for nearly a year. I feel like my general happiness has improved greatly. I felt I spent too much time on social media, scrolling through my news feeds and feeling much of what you've already mentioned, the jealousy, the bouts of depression and negativity from drama on social media. I feel people can be their worst selves on social media, either from being cruel or being on the receiving end of it. And I'm much more content without it. I only maintain my Snapchat account now because that's mostly to communicate with and share photos with my mom, aunts, and sisters. So it's interesting that it does sound like a lot of people have curated their experience to get exactly what they want out of it. Although, Michael, as you pointed out earlier, there may be things going on that we don't see when we are using these so-called free accounts. We've got only about 45 seconds left. Michael, do you have a little bit of advice? A lot of us can't unplug. We have a really hard time unplugging. Maybe we'll take it off our phones and then it makes its way back on there. How do you disconnect?
I think it's about reframing the vision so that you're thinking in terms of a healthy media diet, right? This is not about abstinence. It's about being proactive in choosing what is the platform that works for me, which ones don't work for me, and then trying to curate that media experience so that it's actually hitting your goals instead of kind of passively reaching for the phone whenever you don't know what to do.
Michael Harris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Harris, author of the new book, Solitude in Pursuit of a Singular Life in a Crowded World. And Rachel Young, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rachel Young, assistant professor of journalism at the University of Iowa School of Journalism. And thank you so much to all of the people who wrote and called this hour. I wish that we'd have an opportunity to share all of your comments. Clearly, a lot of people have a lot to share on this subject. We've been talking about the 15th anniversary of the founding of Facebook and how this social media explosion has changed our relationships with each other this hour. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Kate Caitlin Harrop and Emily Woodbury. Our assistant producers are Camus Leeson and Lulu Dewey. You can get in touch with us anytime. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This is Talk of Iowa.